Alrighty, you got time for a quick story? hey guys, and welcome back to the Smokescreen Podcast, episode 5, I believe.
Yeah.
And I'm Chris, by the way, my co-host James.
I'm James.
My co-host Chris, I was waiting on. Anyway, we skipped last week because we had a lot going on with Game of Thrones, but anyway, we're back, and I think James is going to tell us a story.
I have a good one.
So I know you. I mean, you hadn't told me yet, but we've you said it's a cable story.
It is. We were working together at the time,
right?
So there's a chance that as I'm telling this, it'll come back to you.
Okay.
I would say I told most everybody I worked with.
Right. So just for a little backstory, in case you didn't know, we did work together many years in many different jobs, actually, but we worked at the local cable company for, I did for 6 years. I think you left a little earlier and you had back mm-hmm. issues or something. But yeah, so we worked together, different teams, same team, then different teams.
Right.
Because you went over to another department or whatever. But yeah, we installed internet, TV, cable, phone. All that good stuff. It was a great job at the time, by the way.
It really was.
It was really cool back in the day. You had your own van, a gas card, your own set of tools. You got to do some cool stuff, and it was just kind of fun hanging out with the guys.
It really was, and I had the most of my time in cable was spent as a contractor. So when I came over and joined you guys,
right,
there was this family feeling.
Yes,
where you weren't going to get left hanging. Somebody was going to come help you out. And I loved it. I would have absolutely stayed there had it not been for, that chance to do funnel cakes.
Right, right. But, yeah, I mean, there's a whole different atmosphere to contracting, which is hell, versus in-house, which, like you said, you get done, you go help somebody. They do the same for you. It ain't stressful. It ain't nothing. It's just two different worlds. Even though it's the same, technically the same job.
Yeah, it's like everybody realizes, hey, you got a family to get home to too. But in the contract world,
exactly,
they don't care.
They don't give
your
a shit.
Your family could be on life support.
Exactly, and they don't care because you got to do 150 points.
The divorce rate is very high in the contract world.
I'm sure, yeah. No doubt. But anyway, this is not about cable.
Well,
but
I do want to say this. I have been in a customer's house as a contractor doing digital phone at 1:30 a.m.
Yes.
That I could not get dial tone on their phone in this elevator they had in their house. They lived on the golf course and had a freaking elevator in their house. And it took me till 1:30 to figure out how to get the dial tone on that elevator phone. They said by law it had to be working in case it got stuck between floors.
A phone in the elevator.
Yes. So I could not leave.
Right.
This guy, I was...
So I'm picturing like all the wiring going down to the top of the elevator in a shaft.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm picturing this rich guy is going to give me a tip of a lifetime.
Of course.
He gave me a Coke and a smile. That is the truth.
That's the way it always works.
I got a 20-ounce Coke out of that guy, and I was there all that time. Oh, that was crazy.
I got to say real quick before you get started, because I know I'm going to let you go, but the funnest part for me was when they opened up the sales stuff.
Oh, I hated your gut.
Because, so what we're talking about is we went out and did, mostly in-house people, we do installs, but mostly trouble calls where you're actually going to fix things.
Yeah.
And it's usually behind contractors and other bad in-house techs. So then they opened it up one time and said, you guys can start making some extra money by upgrading people while you're there if you can. Like if you don't have to schedule another call, you already have the equipment on the truck, you can install it and upsell them and all this kind of stuff. And they ran these contests.
Yeah. And Chris had a background in sales, in cable, and knew all these tricks and everything. He could look at a customer's account, look at their bill, right, go in there and say, oh, for $5 more a month, you can do this and that. And
actually, most of the time it was 99 cents.
Yeah, see, there you go.
You could add phone for 99 cents.
They couldn't say no.
Right.
This SOB won a PlayStation 3.
A PlayStation 3 and basically a half a day off going to Charlotte to pick it up.
Yeah, when they first came out, everybody was wanting one. It was a huge prize, man.
It was, and they bought extra controllers. So it was like three of us out of the whole entire region, and we all met in Charlotte at the main office and got to hang out for a couple hours and eat and get the PlayStations and stuff. So it was pretty cool.
I did about four or five. I seen in about four or five of those papers.
But I took pride in going to trouble calls where something was broken and leaving there with points on my upsells.
Absolutely.
Because I had people that were, you know, pissed off because something was broken. And then while I'm there, I not only fix it, but I get them to upgrade to something else. Now, I don't know. It's just a challenge.
That was great. You were a legend for a little while in the office, man. Everybody was envious of that. And then Josh won that car at that Christmas party.
Oh, that's right. Josh Green won the car. Yeah,
that was so frustrating. It was a Mini Cooper.
Oh, right.
God, that was...
Yeah, now after I'd transferred over to tech and everything, and he was still in the sales stuff, or it came in later, because I never worked with Josh directly. Anyway, just a little backstory. We were cable guys.
Yes, we were. So, I know some of you guys have asked for a story, and this one just hit me yesterday, and I was so surprised that I haven't told it before. And this one should tug at your heartstrings.
Yeah. I don't know. So, I don't know if I remember this or not.
I go to this job in the middle of the day, and a young lady answers the door, and she's dressed in scrubs like a nurse. I go in, I greet her as Miss Whoever is on the account, right?
Right.
She tells me she's not her, and takes me in there and introduces me to her. The lady she introduces me to is probably close to 90 years old.
Right.
And in a wheelchair. And the lady who answered the door was just a nurse who was taking care of her. Well, as it would happen, as it, you know, often did in cable, something caused me not to be able to leave. You know how you got to run like a check, and if the numbers aren't in spec, you have to stay there and figure out. So I was there for quite a while. And plus, you know me, I always took a lot of time with the older people, trying to teach them what I was installing. You know, didn't want to just hand them that remote with, 300 buttons on it and say, here you go.
Right. So, yeah. That's another big difference between in-house and contracting.
Yeah. Absolutely. You have time to do the customer education.
Exactly.
So, well, while I was there, and the other lady realized I was going to be there for, a little longer, she said, hey, somebody has to be here with her. My shift's over. The lady who is taking my place, the other nurse, is running a little late, but she said she has an ETA of about 20, 30 minutes. Do you mind staying here? I'll go ahead and take off, and you stay here until the other girl gets here. And I said, no, absolutely not. So I didn't mind. No, absolutely not. I didn't mind. Yeah.
Okay.
And so by this time, I had already talked to the older lady and realized, she had her mind about her. So I wasn't afraid to be there with her.
Right, right.
And so I remember I was squatted down, in front of her TV and behind her TV, as you often are, and we're talking, and she tells me that it hadn't been long since her husband died. And I was like, oh, I'm really sorry about that. And she said, yeah, we were married for, close to 60 years, but the last, 3 or 4 years, he was in a nursing home. She said, I just couldn't take care of him anymore. And I said, oh, you had to take care of him for a while before he went? And she said, yeah. So she proceeds to tell me this story. They were high school sweethearts.
Damn.
They, had plans to stay in the area and live happily ever after, but Japan bombed Pearl Harbor.
Right.
And
yeah, that interrupted a few things.
It did. So he got pulled into the war, and he got sent to Germany. But they were stationed out somewhere in the Midwest somewhere. It seemed like they were in maybe Texas or somewhere like that. And his best friend got drafted right along with him, and they were stationed together. So his best friend's girlfriend came along, or wife at this point, whatever, came along too. So the two wives lived together while the two husbands were in Germany.
Right.
And she said it wasn't long after he left that she found out she was pregnant. So she wrote him this letter, and she said what she didn't know is that his sister had wrote a letter that arrived before her letter. And it started out, well, I guess you've probably heard by now about Mary and the baby.
Oh.
He thought she had died and didn't know what she was talking about the baby.
Wow.
So, right. Luckily, he got the letter the next day of her saying she's pregnant and all this stuff. And so the baby's born while he's fighting the war. And he comes home after the war. They move back here and open up a local furniture store. And pretty much lived happily ever after.
Is their last name Honeycutt by any chance?
Honestly, I do not remember the last name, and I hate that, because when she was telling me about the furniture store, it wasn't anything that rung a bell to me.
Right, yeah.
But they did absolutely run it until they retired. And then after retirement, they lived together until he started getting Alzheimer's. And she said it, you know, started out easy enough, simple enough, with him just forgetting simple things. But then, you know, he forgot how to dress himself, how to bathe himself. He forgot about, you know, she would have to, like, feed him and stuff like that. And she said, and then he forgot me. And he was... And then this is when she started tearing up. She said he was so mean to me. I would try to tell him, you know, I would have to lock him inside the house because he would leave and go wander the neighborhood.
Right.
And so he was almost a prisoner in the house for his own good. And he was mean to her because he did not know who she was. And she said she would just lay in bed at night and cry, wishing he would remember her, and she was trying as hard as she could to take care of him. Well, she said one day he got missing. He went upstairs, and they had a second phone line upstairs from where one of their kids lived there. They'd been long gone by this time, and it was just an empty room, empty spare bedroom. But he gets on the phone and remembers his home phone number.
From the second line.
Yes. And calls his home phone number. She did not realize what was going on, heard the phone ring, and answered the phone. And as soon as he heard her voice, he said, "Hey, honey." He recognized her.
Damn.
And he says, "I really miss you." And she starts bawling at this point to me.
Right.
and she's telling me, and I said, "Oh, honey, I miss you too. You have no idea." And he said, "I don't know where I'm at, but these people are so nice to me." And she said, "Well, you better be nice to them too if they're taking care of you." And he said, "I will, honey, but they won't let me leave the house. I want to see you so bad."
Wow.
And they commenced to tell each other how much they loved each other and everything, and he was normal. Everything was normal. He said, "I got to go. I got to get back down there before they wonder where I'm at." And he hung up the phone. They said, "I love you." He hung up the phone, and he came back down and had no idea who she was.
That's insane. From upstairs.
Yeah. And she said, "I would sit and I would, you know, try to leave his sight and pray that he would go back up there and call again, so I could have him back again.
Right.
But he never did. And she said, because of my hope that he would do that and remember me, I let him stay here longer than I should have because he was more than I could handle. And dude, I was bawling, Chris. You know those denim shirts we had to wear? Mine yes. was so stained. I was just crying. I kept wiping my sleeves. And then that other nurse came in and ended the story. But I hugged her before I left and everything. And I'll tell you, I left and I cried all the way to my next job. It was just the most powerful, loving story. Made me hate Alzheimer's. What an evil, evil disease that is. But you know, it's strange how strange it is. It reminded me of The Notebook, you know, how
right.
she didn't remember him and everything. But in this story, as soon as he heard her voice on the phone and remembered his phone number, he remembered his home number, called her, and as soon as she answered the phone, he knew her voice, and they had about 10 minutes of normalcy.
And, right. That's so odd how, I mean, it tells you something else is going on.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, she comes back downstairs and doesn't matter if she says, hey, honey, nope. I just talked to you on the phone. Nope. He don't know her.
I guess you need specific triggers in your brain or something weird. And I don't know, but that was a torturous story, but I loved it. I loved that story. And I can't believe I had put it on a shelf in my mind for so long and never thought about it. It would make an incredible movie.
Sure. Oh, yeah, you know, absolutely.
Made for TV movie or something. Lifetime.
Yeah, I was going to say Lifetime should pick that up.
Yeah, that is such a great, great story. And it's true as I'm sitting here. She told me that. And I could just picture it. I mean, you imagine they were high school sweethearts, lived their whole life together, you know, survived a world war. And then to have the end of it like that, you know, it's heart-wrenching to think that that's a possibility.
Yeah, those are horrible. I mean, like you said, Alzheimer's, I mean. And while you were telling that, I was thinking about my grandparents because they were, you know, young and in love. You know, Papa goes off to the war in the Army.
Duck.
You know,
okay.
Goes to the infamous Rainbow Division in Germany, and they were high schools. And I remember, you know, specifically going to their 50th wedding anniversary, you know.
That is crazy. 50 years, dude.
Me and Chad were teenagers then, and looking back at some of those pictures, it's just crazy. I mean, they were absolutely 100% in love from the day they were met to the day they died, that my grandpa died first, but... that's what made me think about it when you were telling that, you know, this, because you don't hear about that anymore.
No. I would say 50-year anniversaries are you know,
yeah.
a dying thing.
Absolutely.
It's... Now, you said he died first?
Yeah.
Did she go downhill
yes.
after he died? That happened to my great-grandparents, too. I've seen it happen.
Yeah, it seems to be a thing, it's a mental thing. He, like I said, there's never been any disease in my family, but he also, back in those days, being in the war, working in mills with asbestos and shit, ended up developing a brain tumor. And he was 76, and he didn't want it operated on. He didn't want to go through it.
Oh, gosh.
So he kind of didn't want to deal with that. He was just, and then it got bad, and it was, I remember specifically, me and Chad were working at that point at a manufacturing facility that makes belts for various machines and treadmills and all kinds of different size belts. And I remember being over there one time, and my grandma said, why don't you shave Papa for him? And right. I was scared too, because I felt like yeah, I was going to cut him. And
course.
I was all, and it was very awkward for us at that point. We were young and never experienced, you know, imminent death of a family member, you know what
right.
I mean? And I didn't do it, and it was just because I was afraid I'd cut him, you know what I mean? Because, literally shaving his face is...
And that old skin is paper thin,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and so I was scared to do it, and I didn't do it, and then I felt so horrible for years after that because I never shaved his face.
Dude.
I mean, it's a simple little thing.
You know what I mean? I can see that. I wouldn't harbor any guilt over that. I get it, man. I get it. That would be so freaking hard. I can't imagine doing it as a teenager, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I get your grandma trying to encourage you to do it. I get that. So you would have that moment.
Right,
but
right.
But in your mind, you're thinking this is a freaking razor and you're right at Paw-Paw's neck and everything.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, it was bad enough seeing him because the first thing that went was his speech, and that's what was the bad part. And it pissed him off. Like, he would try to cuss after he couldn't say something when he was still there in every other way.
Oh, wow.
But if he couldn't say things, and then he would get mad, and you just hear him kind of just blurt out noise.
Oh,
and
that had to be heartbreaking.
It was,
yeah.
And we were already just, it was just terrible to go around, you know, and that was always the place that was our second home for me and Chad.
Yeah, you've shown me a lot of pictures and told me a lot of great, great stories about him.
Yeah, I mean,
so
he was,
what he did to you.
Yeah, he, absolutely. He was, the best man I've ever known.
Matter of fact, you actually were going to incorporate his name into a business, and I still think that's something you should think about.
Yeah, me and Chad actually talked about that.
You know, it was a food. I have to tell you guys, I don't know what else he wants to say, but I'll just tell you it was a food product, and it was fantastic, and it was his grandpa's recipe.
Yes, absolutely. And that's still something that would be very cool to do. Maybe one of these other projects will pop and allow me to do something like that. You know what I mean?
Duck brand. Yeah. I thought that was so awesome.
Yeah, and you heard James say duck earlier. He got that nickname in the war, actually, in Germany. He was, I don't know exactly where, but apparently it was raining somewhere. I think it was Germany. And he was like kind of squatted down on this thing under a roof on the edge of a building. And
the way he was squatted
and his buddy started calling him and said he looked like a duck. And that was his name ever since. I never heard my grandma call him Glenn.
Wow.
And of course I called him Pawpaw. I never called him Glenn ever.
She called him Duck.
If she called him Glenn, he was in trouble. You know.
Exactly.
So it was Duck, and it was just cool to hear that story. And of course that reminds me of asking him about war stories and stuff when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to talk about it.
I know.
Master Sergeant in the Army, and I just know it was a horrible experience, but you know, they saved the world. You know what
they
I mean?
They did.
And recently, actually, me and Chad found this group on Facebook for the Rainbow Division, and we joined it, and people submit their pictures of their grandparents or whoever's, because it was a pretty famous infantry division in the Army. And we went through all these old articles and enrollment sheets to try to find his company and everything.
Yeah.
Chad has... his medals. I have his hats, a couple of his hats, and Chad's got a very cool poster that I want. I'm gonna steal it from him, but it's of Germany, and it shows their route with a rainbow where they went, and they ended up in Nuremberg or whatever it was.
Wow, dude!
So it was a really cool map, and it shows all their where they went, and then they all signed it.
Now that is really
cool.
And
it's in a frame right now, I think, in Chad's they're packing up to move, so I think it's sitting in his garage, but really cool stuff to think about, and really cool to think back to. I mean, these were men.
Oh, yes.
In these days.
You know, that,
I mean, imagine that. You're 17 years old and you're off fighting in a war, getting shot at and whatever, and it's just a whole different atmosphere these days. And it really made me want to, when I started getting into that and looking into the group and people posting their stories, I found a guy on YouTube, I believe, a young kid actually, that wanted to go start interviewing all these World War II guys because there's not many left. And it was really cool. It made me want to talk to some of these guys and get their perspective on life.
Well, I'll tell you, my great-grandfather, he was in World War II, and his story is slightly different because he was 33. Yeah.
During the war.
I went back in Ancestry, right, and found all of this information, which it triggered me to go, you know, Google a bunch of things, right? And so I found a lot of these pictures. He was drafted into the Navy at 33. Now, at this time of his life, He had been married for years, had four kids, had built a house, outgrew that house, built another house.
Right.
And was well into his career at the mill and had to go fight a war with, like you said, a lot of 70. I've looked at muster reports, and he's the oldest dude on the ship.
Right.
A private first class. Yeah. You know?
I mean, that's an old age for a draft.
It was very old.
Yeah.
And so, but through the, you know, miracle of the internet, I was able to follow his route. I was able to follow from the, you know, the time his ship was actually built, put into commission. He got on it, rode it down from the Gulf of Mexico, down through the Panama Canal, came up the other side, went to Hawaii. And, you know, when they cross the equator, they're called a shellback. And I've seen his shellback certificate and all this stuff.
I was going to say, they get a is there a patch?
I don't know if there's a patch. There's a certificate for sure. I've seen it. But he went and he was in Okinawa. I looked at all these muster reports, and I knew where the ship was on certain dates.
Right.
And, like, where he was when the atom bomb was dropped. And then so I Google, you know, how many miles could the mushroom cloud be seen and
all that.
And I was like, my great-grandpa could have possibly seen the mushroom cloud, you know, when it was dropped and all this stuff. After the war, after Japan surrendered, his boat patrolled the coast of China and then came back, was decommissioned. He went back home. So he was on the boat the whole time the boat existed.
Right. And then he got decommissioned.
Yeah. And so I just thought that was fascinating, because just like your grandpa, my uncles and, you know, my mom and everybody says he would never talk about it.
He wouldn't.
You would think, that being such a big thing in our minds, that would be one of the things when you're in the rocking chair that you bring up. But evidently, it was horrible. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, I don't think it's something you're proud of.
Right.
Of things you had to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just
because we're so romanticized by the
idea.
Of it,
we all love the entertainment of war movies and you know, seeing people violence on the screen or in a ring.
Yep.
Or sporty, whether it's boxing, MMA, and whatever. But
when it
comes down to the real deal,
yeah.
That's got to be insane.
It has to be, man. But, you know, again, just the internet, you know, allows you guys to see, follow your grandfather's tracks, and I follow,
really cool.
You know,
it's really
my
cool
great-grandfather's
to be able to see
wake.
That stuff. Yeah.
You know, it's crazy, man. We live in a very privileged time. It's really cool. I don't know. I hate to start us off on such a downer, but, you know, I just thought that was a fascinating story that somebody needs to hear and you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, it brings perspective, you know, about what the fuck's important. You know what I mean?
That's right.
We're all living in this digital, we want all this stuff world, and we're all guilty of it to a degree. And there's nothing wrong with having goals and dreams and wanting things, but these people who we're talking about, whether it's my grandpa or your uncle or that man that you were talking about from the story, they made it possible.
It's a sacrifice.
They absolutely made it possible. So when I hear a bunch of, you know, I don't know, I'm not saying anti-war, because everybody's anti-war.
Right, of course.
But,
yeah.
You know, do you just...
But anti-military, period.
Yes. It really gets under my skin, because I come from a whole military family. My dad's side were Marines. My mom's side were Army, you know, all this kind of stuff. And these men and women went over and risked their lives and saved the world literally from a demon.
Right.
You know what I mean? At the time, you can't just sit back and be a pacifist about shit like that. They would have taken over the world.
Oh, it was the plan.
That was the
they
plan.
Were well on the way too.
Exactly. And
it's crazy to think that France was occupied by Germany.
Right.
You know, at one time. I mean, that beautiful historic country was, you know, Germany. It was in German control.
And how much and how many things they destroyed, history and art and things they burned and destroyed just because they, you know, I don't know. And so I don't want to get into politics, but it drives me insane when I hear the quest for socialism these days, when that's exactly what they were fucking fighting.
You remember, what was a Few Good Men?
Yes.
When they're down at Gitmo, and Tom Cruise is talking to Jack Nicholson's character, and he says, you know, when you lay your head on the pillow, blah, blah, blah. Yes. You know, he's like, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall.
You damn right. You know,
and it's so true. Somebody has to man up.
Somebody's got to do the dirty work.
They have to.
And somebody's got to get their hands dirty.
In their heart that they're a dirty, evil person.
That's right.
They're doing a job, an ugly job.
Yes.
To take care of the rest of
us. Why, you know, in more recent times, I was fascinated by, because I've always been fascinated by military stuff. And part of that is you know, I told the story a while back on a podcast about the college days and whatever. But part of that was, of my growing up and getting out of high school, was do I go to the military? Because I felt like I needed to. You know, my dad, my uncle were all Marines, my grandpa, all that Army side, my other uncles on that side were in Navy. I felt like I needed to. I felt like I had to, like it was a duty, whether it was 2 years, 4 years, do something to serve. And my dad literally talked me out of it,
right.
who was a Marine.
Yeah, there you go.
And he said, look, man, you don't have to, you're not any less of a person if you don't go serve your country. You need to go into computer stuff. That's where the future is. Don't go deal with all the bullshit, because he's not saying the bullshit as in defending the country, but the bullshit along with going in the Marines. Like, right. The shit you don't see.
And put off what you could be learning now.
Right.
That he knew was
because
really
he told me
important.
A lot of stories, my dad did, about, you know, just general nonsense about military life.
And he was trying to set you up for life.
He was.
He's played a long game.
But
you were playing a shorter game.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, anyway, there's still some little bit of regret there. So I've always had a fascination for it. So fairly recently now, I got interested in the Chris Kyle thing, and that reminded me when you said that, you know, he was a sniper. And there's been some controversy with him and Jesse Ventura, and he's since been killed, obviously, on a gun range by a psychopath who
right.
had PTSD or whatever it was.
Yeah,
I think
a guy
it was.
He was trying to help. Right?
A guy he was trying to help. He was a sniper. And it got me thinking back to when people started jumping on him being a public figure, where he kind of got famous for having the most kills.
Right.
And people called him a coward for being a sniper. And it just drove me insane, because they have no idea. I've watched a lot of documentaries and read things about different units and how they work and operate, and specifically snipers, because I was always intrigued by snipers. And Hathcock in Vietnam was one, for example. So it's not just going out there being the coward, because they were calling him a coward.
Basically saying what he wasn't where the fight was. He was hiding.
Yeah, he was getting to hide somewhere, like it's that easy.
Exactly.
And you don't realize how many Marines he saved.
Yeah.
Because he's Overwatch.
Yeah.
He's telling them what's happening, because he's the eyes.
And he's putting himself in harm's way out there by himself, hiding.
Yes.
If he got caught, he's dead.
And they know he's there.
Yeah.
He had a bounty on his head from everybody in Iraq and all that stuff. So, anyway, it just got me on a rant back in the day about that whole shit, where they're attacking these guys who are out doing, like you said, the dirty work, getting their hands dirty to allow us to sit around here and do podcasts.
That's what it allows. It does.
I mean, it's just the bottom line.
Who was the NFL player that?
Pat Tillman.
Tillman, yes.
Navy
Pat
SEAL.
Pat Tillman. He gave up millions.
He just, yeah, walked away.
Yeah, 9/11. I think 9/11 was a huge recruitment.
Oh,
tool,
absolutely,
you know?
A huge catalyst.
Yeah,
I remember saying
that pull.
I got evacuated from Charlotte at the time because I worked in big buildings down there in IT, you know. And I tell you what, I had just Camden was a year old.
Wow.
And I was so thinking about it.
Oh, sure.
I'm sure everybody was.
I did too, yeah.
But it was like, you know, I didn't go when I was 17, 18. Maybe I should now, you know, because.
Right.
Anyway, so.
But yeah, there needs to be that person. You know, every generation needs those people.
Yeah.
I hope for the future of the country's sake that the Pat Tillmans and the, who's the guy?
Chris Kyles.
Chris Kyles are being bred out there. You know what I mean?
I hope there never needs to be another
patriotism.
Yeah, I hope there never needs to be another.
I do too.
Of these type of people, and there's so many other, you know, unknown names. You know, just the Johns and Joes and of the world who's out there that are not in books and rack up kill counts or whatever it is. But yeah,
from
the
Minutemen to the Rainbow, you know, guys, your grandpa was in. I mean, you need people.
I was going to say it got me interested in the history of things, and it. You know, I think I hadn't said it on here before. Me and my dad used to fly model airplanes.
Oh, yes.
And he still does on occasion, but we went out for a couple of years and flew. I mean, we did when I was a kid, but I didn't appreciate it back then, you know. So,
of course.
When I got older, me and my dad would go fly, and we both got replicas of the Tuckasegee Airmen.
I love that plane.
And that was my favorite plane of all time. It still is.
Yeah.
And that was a very cool thing to get into the history of the first black squadron and all these kind of things. The first Navy diver we watched, that movie was
Love
based
that.
Off of it.
Read about him the other day. That little thing popped up in my feed about him, the real dude.
Yeah, exactly. So it got me, you know, knowing my grandpa and my family were involved in actual war, it got me interested in the history of some of these things and how it went down. So, I mean, you can learn a lot from it. But I think... it's really cool that you brought up that story and to remind me of my grandpa and these other people.
It is. It's always good.
Because they have a perspective nobody can possibly understand.
No, sir.
And they call them the greatest generation for a reason. They literally saved the world.
Yes, they did.
And we get to sit around and kind of reap the benefits of it. All of us.
We
Everybody
it
in this
should
country.
Be thankful.
Everybody.
Every time, you know, to me... when the national anthem's played, you know.
That's right.
I believe it should mean something.
Right, know? and that's why, you know, it's a touchy subject when you have protests and all that stuff, and I understand
that.
I
wasn't even thinking that when I brought it up.
I swear
I wasn't. But as soon as I said national anthem, that did come to my mind.
Right,
and
the
I
thing
didn't mean
is,
to
is
there.
They're protecting that right.
That's right.
To protest.
They did.
But you can't, but you have to understand why it pisses other people off, too. You know, do it in a different way or whatever. That is what they're saying, and essentially in those arguments. But I mean, there's nothing wrong with nationalism. Just straight national. There's nothing wrong with being proud of your country.
No,
because it's brought more people out of poverty and lifted the world out of poverty in so many different ways and bettered the world in so many ways, regardless of the sins of the past.
That's right.
That we have to acknowledge and teach, but let's not harp on it.
Amen.
You know what I mean?
Let's
realize that these men we're talking about, whoever they were, wherever they were from, every single person in the world has benefited from them and what they did. And not just Americans. I mean the Allied forces, British, everybody.
Absolutely.
Australia, all those guys. So anyway.
The world is a better place.
I didn't mean to get into political rant.
No, I know, and I didn't mean to lead it there, I swear.
But
I was
just
feeling patriotic when I said that about the national anthem.
Yeah. Anyway.
But, you know, I've always been fascinated by war and war stories all the way back from elementary school. A lot of my papers would be about that. But I will recommend something. On Netflix right now is a Vietnam War documentary series. Who's the guy who does Burns? Maybe I'm wrong about that. I'll have to look it up. But Ken Burns, he does baseball. He does these amazing documentaries. He does this, and like each episode is maybe an hour and 20, hour and 30 minutes long. It goes way back to the 40s when it starts this documentary and explains, you know, how we got stuck there in this hopeless war. And I feel for those guys, but I do recommend it to any of you documentary lovers, war documentary lovers. It's so well put together, well crafted, and it leaves no stone unturned. Highly recommend that.
Yeah, I enjoy them too. I enjoy, and you know, it got me into, you know, Civil War stuff, even back that far. And looking at that, my stepdad was a Civil War buff. My dad is. They looked into all these things, and it got my dad looking into ancestry, like you said before, pulling old draft cards and service records of our recent family and stuff like that. And all the way back to the Civil War. I mean, it's just it's crazy. And it's cool to look back and get that perspective and try to put yourself in their mindset or their shoes for a minute.
I would say,
you know, regular old farmers back in the day who were just there where they're trying to do what they could for their families and bring in, you know, $10 a week or whatever the hell it was. And then here comes somebody saying, you got to report to the nearest fucking fort or whichever branch it was. You know what I mean? So it's insane to think about.
Never miss an opportunity to talk to an older person.
Do not.
And if you're lucky enough to still have your grandparents around or your parents, if they're older, let them bend your ear a little bit. They have some fascinating stuff to tell.
Now, I'm telling you, there's a whole different perspective out there.
There's a movie in everybody's story.
Oh, yeah.
It just has to be told right.
Exactly.
But listen to them, and they will blow your mind. And we'll be them one day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And we said before, we mentioned our generation coming from the, you know, 70s, late 70s, 80s to now is it just, I mean, it's insane to think about the leaps and bounds in technology. And we talked about some of the stuff before, no internet, no phones.
You'll be the guy talking to your grandkids.
I'm telling you now.
Paul, tell me about a VCR.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
This is what's going to happen.
I'll never be a duck, but I'll have some stories. I have done nothing compared to him. I'll never have done anything compared to what he accomplished and the things he did for his country and family and all that stuff. But still, we'll have a unique perspective.
We will, and they will, and we'll be stars in their eyes just like he was in yours. You will be.
Maybe.
You just will be.
Maybe. I don't know. That's all you can hope as a parent is to just, I don't know, you just want to pass on some kind of knowledge, you know, and some perspective because you've been there, done that, you fucked up many times. Don't do what I did. You know, that's all you're trying to do.
That's right.
You know, as a parent anyway. So there's a different perspective there for anybody who has kids. You know this already. But anyway,
I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed talking about this stuff and letting you get that off your chest. You know, I mean, I don't think you should live with any kind of regret about that. And I hope you've made peace with yourself about that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. It's not something that, you know, keeps me up at night. But I mean, there was a long while where I did, you know, for a little bit.
When you would remember him, you would always go to that feeling.
Yeah, because I mean, like I said, I mean, when you talk to my uncle, for example, who was in Vietnam as well, and you see his literal scars and Purple Hearts,
right?
And it was like, you know, why didn't I follow that path? You know, not saying I need to go get shot.
Right.
But, you know, just even if it was 2 years or 4 years or whatever, it don't have to be a lifelong. And I have many friends, you know, couple that that have done, you know, their careers in the military. And so I've always had that little bit of, woulda, coulda, shoulda.
Well,
but
no,
it's not something
I was specifically talking about, you know, don't beat yourself about, you know, the not shaving your grandpa.
Oh, yes, that.
I hope you've made peace with that. I'm sure it does bother you and you feel like you missed a moment there, but anybody could understand that. You know, that was a tough moment. You were overwhelmed with all these new emotions that teenagers, you know, you were in a position there. It was just tough. So
yeah, and I guess I don't too bad. I mean, I do think about it from time to time, especially when I drive by the graveyard where he's at, just near here. You know, I'll think about stuff like that then, or if I stop by there and see my mom and papa or whatever occasionally. But no, I mean, it's not something that where I'm harping on it or whatever, but I'll always think about it, I'm sure.
Like, absolutely.
Miss something there, but you know, hopefully he didn't take it in a bad way.
You know damn well. He's remembering the same things you were remembering about the fishing trips and
all that stuff.
And that camper you showed.
The camper, I was going to say. The camper was awesome.
I know, man. And look, you still camp.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big part of your life that he instilled in you. So.
It really is. Going out in the woods.
Yeah.
Get out in the woods and
find a river.
What's funny is, speaking of that, he used to occasionally go. He wasn't a big hunter. But him and my uncle, Charlie, who was known for his cooking, went out one time and Charlie shot him by accident with a shotgun. Luckily, he was far enough away and was turned. So the shot didn't hit spread out enough and not hurt him real bad. But he thought
that reminds me of what's his name.
That was before you went out with orange vest on to hunt, you know, or whatever. So he thought he was a deer.
It was the vice president. They just made a movie.
That's what that reminded me of when you said where Dick Cheney shot
Dick
somebody.
Cheney, he shot the dude.
Yeah. So that actually happened to my grandfather, my uncle.
Oh my God.
And they told it as a funny story, but I'm sure at the time he was probably like checking his shit.
Oh, hell yeah.
Anyway,
that's why you wear orange vests.
Exactly. That's why there's regulations now. And know where the hell you're at in the woods and whose property you're on. Don't go trespassing. Anyway. But yeah, that was really cool. That was really cool. We didn't know what to expect from you said you want to talk about the story.
Yeah, that was heavy on my mind.
As usual.
I'm glad I got to share it.
Yeah, as usual, we don't know where these things are going. We just sit down and chat about things. Because originally we were going to talk about like the Game of Thrones Arya scene, which we may get back to that some point.
That's right. Because that's been on our mind a lot this week.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, there's been a lot of discussion about, you know, some people thought it was uncomfortable or whatever. And I can see both sides of it. Maybe we'll talk about that later.
Me too. But, yeah. And I'm totally game.
But anyway, yeah. Let us know on YouTube what you think and if you have similar stories. And
yes, I'd love to.
It kind of went into World War II heroes in my eyes, I guess. But again, this is available on YouTube if you're listening there, or also SoundCloud, Google Play, iTunes, Podbean, and Spotify. So, and if you listen on those platforms, if you don't mind, drop us a little rating there.
Yes,
it would really help us
out.
We'd really appreciate it. Whatever you think. So I can't ask you to give us a great rating. Just give us a rating.
Yeah, definitely.
And that'll help us out and get the podcast spread out to more people. So anyway,
looking forward to reading your comments, guys. Thank you.
Yeah. So I guess we'll just as usual, we'll just let it fade to black.
Fade to black.
Which reminds me of I need to get back and play more guitar.
Oh, you're jamming lately, man.
Oh, I'm not jamming yet.
It doesn't sound like noise anymore. It sounds like a song.
Well, it kind of resembles music a little bit.
It's right. Kick ass.